This is the Genuine Humans podcast, brought to you by Social Element. I'm Tamara Littleton.
And I'm Wendy Christie.
In our podcast, we'll discover the stories of the leaders behind the brands and the trailblazers who are making a real difference in our industry. We'll delve into how they got to where they are today.
And we'll hear about the genuine humans who supported and influenced them along the way.
Welcome back to Genuine Humans, and I'm here with my fabulous co-host, Wendy Christie. Wendy, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. I think I'm feeling a little better than you have been the past few days. How are you feeling now?
I'm feeling a lot better. I can't work out if this is allergies, colds or whatever, but delighted to be feeling a bit better. And I'm also delighted to welcome our Genuine Humans guest today, and that is Gail Compty, who is Senior Vice President of Lions Learning at Cannes Lions, where she combines her love of technology and creativity, and she leads the Lions Learning pillar. So welcome to the podcast, Gail.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm a big fan of Cannes, having been there sort of 6 years and did it this year as well. And I think it just gets better and better. So huge fan of everything connected to Cannes Lions. But I'd love to know, Gail, how you got to where you are now. Do you want to give us a bit of a flavour of how you got into the industry and how you got to where you are now?
Yeah, of course. And if you'll allow me, I'll go even a bit further back because I think it's relevant here. But I grew up in the French Alps and I grew up in a small village. You know, I'm from a working class family. And at the time, I thought the jobs, the careers were the ones that I could see. And, you know, you were a postie, you were a boulanger, you were a cleaner. But I think it never even occurred to me that marketing or advertising were jobs, that you know, people were working in these professions. And in high school, I was doing quite well academically, but my parents wanted me to go into an apprenticeship to become an optician because they saw it as a, you know, safe job, a job that was maybe a level up in terms of what I could aspire to in our village. But I had a teacher who pushed me to explore other routes, and I ended up going to university in Lyon. And I started in uni studying English because I loved the language. I loved everything about the British culture. And I thought, that's going to be brilliant. I'm going to learn to speak fluently. But it turns out that I was learning how to write in English, but never actually spoke the language. And I ended up dropping out. I had a brilliant year off working in English pubs, dating English guys who were studying in Lyon. It was brilliant. But at the end of that year, I realized I had to sort of go back on track. And I found a program for international trade and marketing. And I applied to it. And, you know, I spent the next 5 years studying, doing international internships, including a few months in Cardiff, where I was invited into the Welsh Club, mostly because I was not English, I think. And it was great because it was like being abroad, you know, in the Welsh Club, everybody speaks Welsh. And at the end of my studies, I had to do an internship abroad. And that also ended up being my first job in London. And my first couple of jobs, really, the first one was working for a small company who sold French furniture to British retailers. So obviously they needed someone who could speak French to the French manufacturers. But it was very much an admin job, despite, you know, I'd studied marketing and advertising, but it was quite hard to break into the industry when you're not a native speaker. And also when you just turned up with a suitcase and, you know, an interview for an internship. So it's not as if I knew anyone to help me get that job. I then moved on to be a business manager assistant in the international division of Debenhams. So that was, you know, a slightly bigger company, but I was still very much doing admin-y jobs. And I got a break managing advertising for Southeastern, a train operating company covering London and the Southeast. And I became their advertising manager. At the time, I was managing a budget about £3 million on their advertising. And honestly, even to this day, I don't really know how I got the job because I really had no experience. And I would have meetings with my agency, so with my creative agency and my media agency, and I'd pretend to understand what they were talking about. You know, they were talking about 6 sheets and 48 sheets and all these different formats. And I'd go like, yeah, it's a good idea. Let me think about that and I'll come back to you. And then I'd get back to the office and I'd just Google furiously all these terms that I'd written down and that I didn't know about. But that was my first experience, and that's really how I got into marketing, into advertising. And it was a great first experience because we were working with this brilliant ad agency called Rapier, and they created this beautiful creative work for us on a shoestring budget. And I think that was my first real big introduction to what advertising is, what marketing is. And yeah, it was that's how I got in, basically.
You were hooked.
I was hooked.
But I think it's so good, you know, that when people are given the chance to learn on the job, because, you know, that as long as you have sort of good people around you and you have the right attitude and people sort of steering you, then I think that's a good thing about the industry.
I think they took a chance on me, though, to be completely honest. And I don't quite know what they saw in me, but it worked out. I ended up moving to Carlton Warehouse and looking after their international advertising campaigs, then News UK and then Virgin. But that was really that first job that sort of propelled me into the industry and got me to understand the ecosystem around marketing and advertising as well.
And can you give us a little flavour of what it is that you're doing now with the Lions?
Yes, so I joined Lions, who are who's the company behind Cannes Lions, Walk, Contagious as well, in August 2021. So it was still COVID years, and like many events businesses, Lions had suffered from the unpredictable lockdowns. You know, in 2020 there was no event, there was no awards, which means of course no revenue. In 21, they'd moved the festival and the awards online, but it was not quite the same as being on the Croisette. I don't know if you watched the Cannes Lions live that year. And I think our CEO, Simon Cook, realized even before the pandemic, when he took over as a CEO, that we should invest in digital innovation because otherwise we were overly reliant on one big moment a year. So I was hired to grow a digital platform that was called Lions Membership, which was initially launched as a way to broadcast the online festival. It was then, when the event came back, it was rolled into our digital inspiration platform called The Work, which I oversaw. And last year, I also launched a series of amazing digital learning courses like the Lions Creative MBA or the Master of Advertising Effectiveness with James Ehrman. And this year, we just launched the Lion Growth MBA with Fandana Machado. So I was basically brought in as part of that digital innovation effort because I had background in launching digital startups for The Times and The Sun, and because of the work I'd done on a tech platform for Virgin. And it's been a great ride because, like I said, I think my role changed slightly every year because I took on other parts of the business and did other stuff. But it didn't come without challenges because, as you can expect, it's quite a transformation for an events business. So it was quite a cultural change for the teams. But now the great result is that our revenue streams are much more evenly split between events and non-events. And it's a lot healthier. At the start of the year, I was asked to take on the campus learning. So we've got some program on site at Cannes Lions. We've got the Young Lions competitions. We've got the creative and the brand marketing academies and the CMO Accelerator. And we created that new Lions learning pillar, which I'm essentially the managing director for. So that's my fourth job.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
And you touched on your childhood a little bit there, growing up in the village in the French Alps, which, by the way, just sounds idyllic. And I loved what you said about sort of expectations of a job with the jobs that you could see. And actually, that's something that I don't think it's come up on the podcast before, but I think it's probably the experience of most of us as kids. Which jobs that you could see did you think you might want to do when you grew up?
I had a very clear plan. I was going to be a vet with a florist shop.
Ah,
because obviously,
wonderful.
You know, vets are not too busy, so they can run a retail business on the side.
Of course.
I was always very attracted to animals, and I just thought that would be a great way basically to help animals, help owners. Now that I'm a bit older, I realize that it's a really tough job because you probably see animals mostly when they're suffering. But yeah, at the time that was my dream.
Lovely, thank you. And did you have people who you particularly looked up to as a child, whether it was someone in your life or a sports person or a TV personality or anyone?
It's a bit closer to home, but I really admired, and I still admire, my older sister, because I think growing up gay in a village in France in the 80s was not, you know, was not for the faint-hearted. It was extremely hard. And I remember, you know, men bullying her on the street and all these kinds of awful behaviors. Mm-hmm. But she was always true to herself. You know, she was always very honest and transparent. And it wasn't easy. She's super strong. She's very resilient. And she's also 10 years older than me. So she was a great advisor. She was a great supporter. She was a shoulder to cry on when I needed help. She still is, you know, when I was navigating my teenage years challenges or even now. So, yeah, I think she was really the one who I really admired and still do.
She sounds like an amazing role model, not only for you, but for the people growing up behind her.
I mean, she looks after adults with special needs. Her wife works for an animal shelter. So they're like two saints, basically. And they're brilliant people.
They do sound absolutely wonderful. And are there any, can you, if thinking back to your childhood and thinking to what you were like and the things that you enjoyed, do you see any correlation between that and where you've got to in your career so far? Any themes? Were you particularly resilient, for example?
I think as a child, I was pretty quiet, pretty shy. I was a teacher's pet, you know, I just wanted to please people. And I don't think that has changed much. Mm-hmm. I was also brought up in a bit of an old school French way, you know, children must be seen, right, not heard, and adults, in particular if they're men, they know best. I've since found out that that's not true. And I also don't have children, but I can see that my girl children have got very much a voice. They've got a say in what they like and want, and I think it's a much healthier way of doing this. Saying that, you know, I think one of the key values in my family and growing up was that working hard will get you recognized and rewarded. And I think that's true to an extent. You still need, mm-hmm, you know, to have people advocating for you. You still need to advocate for yourself. But I think I've definitely learned resilience growing up. Again, coming from that background, I didn't necessarily have the ready-made network that other students of my business school had. You know, I was on a grant. We had to find internships, but I didn't have anyone in my family who had corporate jobs and who could introduce me to people. Or hire me. So I really had to hustle to get these internships. And I remember we had to find one abroad in the first year. And I don't know, I must have written about 120 cover letters by hand and posted them. Wow. Because it was very early days. I didn't have internet at home. And I'd love to see what my cover letters said, actually, because, you know, it must have been in slightly broken English as well. But, you know, I got the internships. I did quite well. And I think it made me not scared to start from scratch. And that's how I just turned, mm-hmm, up in London with no real network, you know, just the promise of an interview, and just I was able to make it work.
Yeah, that's pretty brave. I think not everyone would have the guts to do
Thank
that.
Thank you. But I didn't think it was brave at the time. It was just something that I wanted to do and I had nothing to lose. So why not?
Exactly. And how about in your career? Have there been people who have particularly influenced or inspired or supported you?
Yes, I think, you know, when I was reflecting on this, I think actually I've had so much help and so many supporters and so many people who helped me progress. And I think it goes back to, I mean, my parents were brilliant cheerleaders and supporters. You know, they didn't always knew what was the right answer or the right path to take, but they really believed in me and thought I would make it a success. And sometimes that stressed me out because I was thinking, well, mm-hmm, what if I disappoint them? I had that high school teacher who said, no, she shouldn't go into an apprenticeship. She should go into, you know, further education because she'll do really well. And I think without her, I would have probably just followed the path that was sort of laid out for me. And I think in every job, I've had someone help me or advocate for me or promote me. I had a brilliant, slightly older colleague at Debenhams. I think she was called Sarah Sweeting. We're not in touch anymore. But when I was looking for a job at the end of my contract, she told me that everyone polishes their CV up a bit. And for me, it was new news because I just thought I had to be, you know, very down to earth and very factual. And she even ran some mock interviews with me to help me. And I reckon that's probably why that first job in advertising, actually, because she probably coached me through the questions that'd be asked. when I was at Carphone Warehouse, I had a boss who came to do a Matleaf cover called Alex Korda. And she was only here 10 or 12 months, but she coached me, she mentored me, she challenged me in so many ways. And she even secured a promotion for me before she left. And I still see her as a brilliant advisor and a friend, really. At Virgin, I had Lisa Thomas, who was at the time chief brand officer for Virgin. And she agreed to be my mentor. And I really loved our conversations because, again, you know, she was challenging me and she was giving me no-nonsense advice that was so helpful in my career. And she's also one of the smartest and funniest people I know. And she sponsored me to get into Wacol this year. So I'm really grateful to her for many, many reasons. And I've had, I mean, I can't name everyone, but my other Virgin colleague, Michael Buffum-Wade, actually recommended me for my role at Cannes Lions because I don't think it was advertised at the time. It was recruited through a headhunter. And if he hadn't put my name forward, I probably wouldn't be in my current position. And even now, I've got a brilliant support network at Lions of peers, of colleagues, you know, but Ilaria, Jenny, Nicola, Kate, Sophie, Noelle, so many people, too many to name actually, because I would forget some people. And they support me when I need help, and they're here to listen when I need to vent. And I think you really need this at work so that you feel a bit like you have you're psychologically safe, you've got a safe space. So yeah, when I was reflecting on this particular topic, I just felt really humbled because there are a lot of people who actually contributed to my career and my personal success.
That's wonderful. And let's go back to speaking about Cannes as well. So I know that you said that you joined during COVID and that the digital transformation, it was a big issue. And a big part of your role was to adjust to the events being cancelled and obviously then getting people on board in the team and everything. Can you just tell us a little bit more, go into a bit more detail about that journey?
Yes. When I joined, so it was August 21, the Cannes Lions Live, so the online version of the event and the awards had just taken place. And I basically joined to develop that digital platform, Lions membership, but I did not have a team. It was a standalone role, and basically you would essentially influence, beg, borrow resources from loads of different teams to make it work. And I think it was probably the first time where I both started a new job that didn't exist before and also didn't quite have the team set up around it. Because in the past, I would have done a new job that never existed before in the company. But, you know, there was a team and it was quite clear that what the ways of working would be. But it was almost like the ultimate startup role where, you know, you need to figure out what needs to be done, how to do it, who you can lean on to make it happen. And I just remember everybody being really keen to help, actually, and keen to get involved. You know, I was working with the content team at the time to put together some webinars and some programs for the members. And everybody was just happy to muck in. I think where it was harder was on the digital product side. It was actually, you know, building a team around it of a product manager, some engineers, people who could help develop the platform as well as the content. Because at the time, it's very different now, but at the time, Lions was invested a lot in the tech around the event. So the app, the website, but we're not very well set up to launch digital products. So yeah, that was probably the main challenge. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. I was just sort of reflecting that it's not everyone's cup of tea to have like a blank sheet of paper, and it's very entrepreneurial. I personally love it, but it sounds like you really sort of thrived from that sort of entrepreneurial approach.
I think my sweet spot is really that startup within a big company, because I've tried pure startups and I find it quite difficult. But a startup within a big group, you're able to be agile. You can be quite nimble, quite entrepreneurial, but you've got the name above the door. And, you know, when I was working for The Times or Virgin, or now that I'm at Lions, if you call someone and say, hi, I'm from Cannes Lions, will you have a meeting with me? They might not buy your product. They might not agree to partner up with you, but at least you'll have that initial meeting, which, you know, is a massive, massive foot in the door. So yes, that's definitely that sweet spot for me.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I know also from, you know, from our chats that you're very passionate about the importance of social mobility and also empowering women. And you're now a member of WACL, of course, which I'm a member of. We're still sort of newbies together. Can you share why that passion is so important to you?
Yes, I think it's a personal reflection, really. For me, social mobility, I mean, I can't help but think that if I had different perspectives in my life, or if I had different advice, a better network, maybe I would have had a more successful career, or maybe it would have been a little bit easier. So I would like to help give access to these people who have got a similar background, who are underrepresented, who are from social minorities, the support that they need to broaden their network and opportunities. So I've done a lot of mentoring in the past. My part of Cannes Lions, so my business unit, also support the Effie and Lions Foundations. And the remit here is to support underrepresented minorities with access to industry training and industry opportunities. And basically my courses form the bulk of that training. I'm also a member of Bloom UK, which is all about empowering women and helping the next generation. I'm a member of WACL, like you said, and I'm just very passionate about supporting the next generation of women, helping close the gender gap, which is one of WACL's main mission points, and doing everything I do so that I give people like me the opportunities that I didn't have, essentially.
Yeah, that's such an important point. And I think, yeah, these networks, I feel from my point of view that they're absolutely core to everything I do now. I'm kind of, it's almost like you have to have fewer and better networks. I don't know how you feel about the different networks that you're in and how they've helped you personally.
I think I'm a relatively new member of all these communities. With the 93% Club, they organise some brilliant events, and I've actually joined some really good ones that were organised with Ernest Young. WACL, I attended the first AGM, and it was just so inspirational to see so many brilliant women in one room. You know, that the intellectual power has these people that I've seen on stage, people that I've seen in the news, and now suddenly they're in the room with us. Again, quite humbling, imposter syndrome flaring, but... And with Bloom this year, I'm leaning in more to support that community. I think it's really important to give back. And I'm a partisan of you give first. And then if something comes back in a few months or a few years, you know, great. But it's not my initial purpose, I guess. What I'm genuinely trying to do is give back to that community or these communities.
Thank you, Gail. So we're going to move on to the last section of the podcast now, where we'll ask you some quickfire questions that are a bit more personal. Let's start with, what's your idea of a perfect weekend?
I love having people over for dinner and for drinks. I think deep down, I'm probably a bit of a feeder. You know, I always over cater because I'm worried that people will go hungry, but we can dress it up as me being nurturing.
We're on our way.
Yeah. I really enjoy long walks, preferably by the beach. And my partner and I foster dogs, so it's an additional incentive to get out and about. And I've recently started tinkering with the silversmithing. So,
oh wow!
I really like using the blowtorch. It really mesmerizes me. So I think a weekend with a blend of these three activities, you know, a bit of creative, bit of exercise, bit of people, but not too much because I need time to recharge my battery, would be the absolute ideal weekend for me.
Sounds wonderful. How would your friends describe you?
That's a tough one because I think, I know because they've told me, the initial impression is never very good because I can come across as cold, even judgy. So I've been told, not that I'm judging, but I generally think it's because I'm an introvert and I take time to warm up. But if you ask my friends, once we've passed that initial phase, I hope that they'd say that I'm a loyal friend, someone who's willing to really help and give a lot to the ones that I love. If you ask my very best friends, they'd probably be extremely rude. So I can't repeat that on this recording, I don't think.
I think that's the measure of a true friend, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's the best kind of friends.
On a different note, how would you fare in a zombie apocalypse?
So I've been training really seriously for this.
We've never heard that before.
Had about 8 years of watching The Walking Dead, loads of other post-apocalyptic movies, TV show. So I feel like I'm quite prepared as to what to do initially, which is get out of the city. But in reality, I'd probably get done pretty quickly trying to protect my dog. I mean, I was watching The Last of Us earlier this year, and the character's physical condition is just out of this world. You know, they hike for 50 kilometers and then they fight a zombie horde with weaponry for an hour. So, yeah, I probably need to start working out a bit more. But I've got the theory down. It's just a physical condition.
It's a good start.
You just need to gather other people in front of you like a human shield. So you can run away.
Is this your strategy then?
No, I'm building off yours now. I was thinking I'm not going to make it. I need to get fitter as well. But So what gives you joy in life, either in or out of work?
I think at work, what gives me genuine joy is seeing my team members and my colleagues succeed, because it just makes me quite emotional. Our team won an internal award recently for a product launch, and I was literally sobbing before going on stage. And I was so happy for what it meant for our business, for our team, you know, and the way that it would help put our team on the map, basically, because we're now part of quite a bigger network. Out of work, you know, the usual family, friends. My little dog has been with me through the thick and thin. This kind of stuff basically powers me.
I love that. What would be the tagline on a poster for a movie about your life?
She loved her dog and maybe three other people. That's the birthday card that my friend's daughter picked for me. So she's only 8 years old, but I feel like this kid really sees me, because it's a good tagline.
I kind of like the hierarchy of things. It's important to be upfront about these things, you know.
I mean, dog not first. Hiding yeah. it.
Okay, important questions. So I know that at Cannes Lions there was karaoke that I was a little bit upset that I didn't take part in, actually, but it's a favourite of mine. What are your feelings about karaoke, and do you have a go-to song?
I love karaoke. I missed it at Cannes Lions, so I'm also upset. Very interesting. We've got karaoke at almost every single one of our team events, so I think it must be part of our brand values. And my go-to would be something from Edith Piaf that I can really belt out, like Non, okay. Je ne regrette rien. I used to be in bands when I was younger, and that kind of big, you know, old school anthem I really enjoy.
I think Fantastic. We need an Edith Piaf sing-off between the two of you, because it's also Tamara's.
It is. Yeah, it is my
really?
Favourite karaoke.
No way.
Of course, my French is not
song?
Going to be as good.
Je ne regrette rien. Je ne regrette rien. Brilliant.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. We're definitely doing that. Come on, let's book it in.
Can we make it into a duet?
Yes. We do it in Lucky Voice. You know, it's quite private. It's fine.
I am on a separate mission to start setting up a wackle karaoke night. So you heard it here first.
Sign me up.
So I think we've covered a lot today, and thank you so much for coming and being our guest today, Gail. And is there anything that either you wished we'd asked that we didn't, or I'm going to leave you with any closing thoughts?
I wish you'd asked me for a promo code so I could plug my brilliant learning products. No, I'm
go
just
for
kidding.
It. Go for it. we'll put it in the show notes.
I'm just kidding. No, this was great fun. Thank you so much for having me. You know, if anyone's listening and wants to connect about social mobility or helping the next generation of female leaders, please do, because I love having a chat, even though I'm not good with people, clearly.
You've been listening to Genuine Humans, brought to you by Social Element. If you loved what you heard, remember to rate, review, and subscribe.